thinking. The silence made Darby uneasy. Like any good showman, Ashley was difficult to read, only telegraphing his violence when he meant to. His younger brother still dutifully held her at gunpoint, never letting the barrel touch her back, never letting the weapon bob within grabbing distance. Lars asked again,
"How long ago did she break out?"
Again, Ashley didn't answer. He stopped with his hands on his hips, studying Jay's footprints in the snow. They led north, away from the rest stop, up the rising land, past the overpass, along the on-ramp, toward State Route 7. His words simmered in her mind. "You don't get it yet, Darbs. You will." She estimated, based on the powder that had accumulated atop the van's rear door, that Jay had broken out and escaped roughly 20 minutes ago, before the attack in the restroom, at least. The girl's footprints were already growing faint, filling in with dusty snowflakes.
"What's that?"
Lars asked. Ashley knelt to retrieve something, like a wrinkled black snakeskin. But Darby recognized it, the electrical tape they'd sealed over Jay's mouth. She'd discarded it here as she fled. Wisely, Jay had avoided the visitor center, because she'd known Ashley and Lars were inside. So she'd gone for the highway, probably in hope of flagging down a passerby and calling the police. Except this poor girl didn't know where she was. She didn't know they were well beyond the outskirts of Gypsum, well beyond the outskirts of anything notable. 9,000 feet above sea level. She didn't know it was 6 uphill miles to the summit and 10 downhill to the power station. That this bleak, wind-shredded climate might as well belong to Antarctica. Jay was an affluent city kid from San Diego, a land of yucca palms, sandals, and 60-degree winters. Darby raked her mind, now throbbing like a hangover. What had Jay been wearing back inside the kennel? A thin coat, that red pokeball t-shirt, light pants, no gloves, no weather protection at all. Finally, in a flash of horror, she got it. So did Lars.
"She's going to freeze to death out there.
We'll follow her tracks," Ashley said.
"But she could be a mile down the road. We'll call out to her. She won't come to our voices."
"You're right," Ashley nodded to Darby.
"But she'll come to hers."
Now both brothers were looking at her. For a moment, the winds faded and the parking lot fell silent. Only the gentle patter of snowflakes landing around them. As Darby quietly realized why Ashley hadn't already killed her.
"Well, here we go," he shrugged. "I guess that puts us on the same team, huh? Neither of us wants a black-fingered little Jaycicle."
Jokes. Everything was a joke to him. She said nothing. He clicked a pocket flashlight, spotlighting the girl's footprints with a blue-white LED beam. Snowflakes ignited like sparks. Then he aimed the light into her face, an eye-watering brightness.
"Start calling her name."
Darby stared at her feet, tasting stomach acid in her throat. A rancid, greasy sort of heartburn, bubbling with terrible thoughts. "I shouldn't have given her that knife. What if, by intervening tonight, I made things worse? What if I got Jay killed?" Lars's pistol jabbed her spine, a harsh gesture that meant walk. If she'd been ready for it, she could have spun around, swiped for the gun, and maybe, just maybe, seized control of it. But her opportunity passed.
"Her name is Jamie," Lars said, "but call her Jay.
Go on, follow the tracks and start hollering." Ashley swept his LED light at the footprints, and then looked back at her with darkening eyes.
You wanted to save her life so badly? Well, Darbs, here's your chance.
The girls' footprints led them along the on-ramp to the dirty ice banks of State Route 7 before veering uphill into the woods, up a rocky slope of snowdrifts and precarious fir trees. Every step of the way, Darby silently dreaded reaching the end of these tracks and finding a collapsed little body in a red pokeball shirt. Instead, something even worse happened. Jay's footprints simply vanished, erased by windswept snow. Darby cupped her hands and shouted again, "Jay?" It had been 30 minutes now. Her voice was raw. Up here, the only navigational landmark was the sulking shadow of Melanie's Peak, due east. The land steepened as they climbed. Boulders broke through the snowpack. Granite faces glazed with rivulets of ice. The trees here teetered on shallow roots, leaning over, branches sagging. Sticks snapped underfoot, like tiny bones breaking in the snow.
"Jay Nissen?"
Darby swept the flashlight, throwing jagged shadows. "If you can hear me, come to my voice." No answer. Only the stiff creak of the trees. "It's safe," she added. "Ashley and Lars aren't here." She hated lying. But coaxing Jay back was the poor girl's only chance at survival now. Possible death at the hands of the Garver brothers was still better than certain death in a sub-zero blizzard, right? It made sense, but she still despised herself for lying. It was humiliating, made her feel naked. She felt like Ashley's little pet, speaking obediently on his behalf. Her nostrils still crusted with dried blood from when he'd recently slammed her face into a table. The brothers followed her but kept their distance, lingering 10 paces back on her left and right. Cloaked in darkness, while Darby carried the only source of illumination, Ashley's LED flashlight. This was all according to Ashley's plan. Jay wouldn't dare emerge if she saw her abductors stalking behind Darby, holding her at gunpoint. At least that had been the idea. So far, it hadn't worked. Jamie Nissen, the missing daughter of some wealthy San Diego family, with a Christmas tree standing over a pile of unopened presents. Now she was somewhere out here in the howling Rockies, her fingertips blackening with frostbite, her organs shutting down, buried by flurried snowflakes, tears icing on her cheeks and freezing her eyelids shut. They could have already stepped over her little body, 5 minutes back, without even noticing. Hypothermia is a peaceful way to go, Darby recalled reading somewhere. Apparently the discomfort of coldness passes quickly, replaced by a warm stupor. You don't die so much as drift off to a dumb sleep, oblivious to the awful damage inflicted upon your extremities. Crunchy fingers, dark blisters of ulcerated flesh that go necrotic and must be sliced away with a knife. But in your brain, you're far away, swaddled in a snug blanket. Darby hoped it was true. She hoped Jay hadn't suffered. She called out again into the darkness. Still, no answer. To her left, she heard Lars whisper, "How much longer?" To her right, "As long as it takes." She knew Ashley wasn't stupid. He was running the same numbers in his mind. 30 minutes spent following these half-buried footprints, plus a 20-minute head start, at least, meant Jay's chances of survival in these freezing woods were poor, and getting worse every second. Half-heartedly, Darby assessed her own options here at gunpoint. Fight? Get shot. Run? Get shot in the back. She considered turning and shining the flashlight into the gunman's eyes to blind them, but they'd been around it for over a half hour, so their pupils were already adjusted to it. This was problem one. And even if she could blind them for a few seconds, the snowbound terrain was too rough for a quick escape. Which was problem two. To her left, Lars fretted.
What if we got Jay killed?
To her right.
We didn't.
What if we did?
We didn't, baby brother. A pause. She might have, though.
This hit Darby like a twisting dagger in her gut. How painfully right Ashley was. It made sense in an evil way. If she hadn't intervened tonight, Jay would still be penned up in that dog kennel inside their van. Captive, but very much alive. Icy fingers reached around her stomach and slowly, oh so slowly, began to squeeze. Why did I have to get involved? Why couldn't I have just called the cops in the morning? She tried to focus on her own survival, on solving problem one, the light, and problem two, the terrain, but she couldn't. She wished she could rewind this horrible night and undo her decisions. All of them. Every last choice she'd made, ever since she first peered through that frosty window and saw Jay's hand grasping that kennel bar. She wished she'd been content to simply play detective and gather information. She could have waited quietly until the morning, held her advantage, and maybe after the snowplows arrived and the rest stop refugees went their separate ways, she could have discreetly tailed Ashley and Lars's van in her Honda, a quarter mile back, one hand on the steering wheel, her iPhone in the other, feeding the Colorado State Police detailed information to stage their arrest. She still could have saved Jay, and Mom would still have pancreatic cancer. But no. Instead, Darby Elizabeth Thorne, a college sophomore with zero law enforcement or military training, tried to take matters into her own hands. And now here she was, walking through the woods with a .45 aimed at her back, searching for a dead child. To her right, a morbid laugh.
Gotta say, Darbs, as far as good Samaritans go, you're just batting 1,000. First, you confide in one of the abductors, and then you get the abductee killed. Nice work.
Everything was a joke to Ashley Garver. Even this, somehow. Christ, she loathed him. But now she wondered, had he been telling her the truth after all? Maybe it really was a textbook ransom plot, just like he'd described to her. And post-payment, the brothers really had intended to return Jay to her family alive. She imagined them jettisoning her at some sun-bleached bus stop in flyover country. Little Jaybird blinking in the Kansas sun after 2 weeks of darkness, rushing to the nearest stranger on a bench, begging them to call her parents. Until Darby intervened, that is, and handed the little girl a Swiss Army knife, so she could escape into a hostile climate she was utterly unprepared for. And another venomous thought slipped into her mind. She felt guilty for even thinking it, given what had already happened, but it burrowed in like a splinter and wouldn't leave. They're going to kill me now. Darby was certain of this. Now that Jay is lost, now that they don't need my voice, and now that they were beyond earshot of the rest area, Lars had been waiting for permission to shoot Darby in the back of the head, and Ashley had finally given it to him. The phrase, batting 1,000, was the tip-off. It meant kill. It was called spy code. Since they'd been kids, Ashley had buried dozens of secret messages within everyday dialogue. Lucky me means stay. Lucky you means go. Extra cheese means run like hell. Ace of spades means pretend we're strangers. Failure to obey one meant an instant yellow card. And Lars's fingers were pocked with the pale scars of past errors.
Tonight had already featured one frighteningly close call. He'd nearly missed Ace of Spades back at the rest area. But he'd known this one was coming. The pistol was ice cold in his hands. His skin stuck to the metal. It was a Beretta Cougar, a stout, stubby firearm that bulged under his coat and never felt quite right in his hands, like gripping a big jelly bean. The Cougar was usually chambered in 9mm, but this particular model was the 8405, so it fired the fatter 45 ACP, automatic Colt pistol, cartridge. More stopping power, but punchier recoil, and fewer rounds stored in the clip. The magazine, Ashley insisted. 8 shots, single-stacked. Lars liked it well enough, but he'd secretly wished for the Beretta 92FS instead, like the iconic pistol that the hard-boiled detective Max Payne dual-wields in his series of Xbox games. He would never admit this to Ashley, of course. The gun had been a gift. You never, ever question Ashley's gifts or his punishments. That's just how big brothers are. One day, he'd brought Lars a stray cat from the shelter, a peppy little Torby, a mix between a tortoiseshell and a tabby, with a loud purr. Lars had named her Stripes. Then, the next day, Ashley drenched Stripes in gasoline and hurled her into a campfire. Like any big brother, I giveth and I taketh away. Lars raised the Beretta Cougar now. As they walked, he aimed at the back of Darby's head. Aim small, miss small. The painted night sights aligned. 2 neon green dots traced a vertical line up her backbone. She was still a few paces ahead of them, sweeping Ashley's flashlight through the trees, her body silhouetted perfectly by her own light. She had no idea. He squeezed the trigger. To his right, Ashley plugged his ear, bracing for the gunshot, and Darby kept trudging through the knee-deep snow, aiming the flashlight ahead, unaware that she was inhabiting the last few seconds of her life, unaware that Lars's index finger was tightening around the Beretta's trigger, applying smooth pressure, a half ounce from drilling a .45 caliber hollow point right through her. She clicked the flashlight off. Blackness. Darby heard their startled voices behind her.
I can't see. What happened? She turned off the flashlight.
Shoot her, Lars! She ran like hell, staggering through deep snow, hard gasps stinging her throat. She'd night-blinded them both, not by flashing them with the LED beam, which their pupils had already adjusted to, but by taking it away. She'd been shielding her own eyes to preserve her night vision. This was her solution to problem one. As for problem two, Ashley's voice behind her, calm but urgent.
Give me the gun. Can you see her? Give me the gun, baby brother.
Even downhill, it was like running in waist-deep water, lurching over snowdrifts, dodging trees, stumbling, banging a knee against icy rock, recovering, her heartbeat thudding in her ears. No time to stop. Don't stop. Ashley's voice raised.
I see her. How can you see her?
He kept an eye shut, she realized with racing panic. Just like I taught him. He shouted after her.
Thanks for the trick, Darbs.
He was aiming at her right now, taking a marksman's stance. She felt the pistol's painted sights tingling on her back like a laser. Inescapable. No chance to outrun him. Just dwindling microseconds. Now, as Ashley squeezed the trigger and Darby executed her desperate solution to problem two. What's faster than running? Falling. She hurled herself downhill. The world inverted. She saw a whirl of black sky and frozen branches, plunging in a half second of free fall. Then a wall of shorn granite rushed up to meet her. Thunderous impact. Stars pierced her vision. She lost the flashlight. She rolled on knees and elbows, kicking up flecks of snow in a bruising tumble.
Where is she?
I see her. 10 somersaults down. The ground flattened again, and she landed hard and dizzy. She scrambled upright, kept going, hurtled through prickly undergrowth with outstretched hands, branches breaking against her palms, slashing bare skin. Then the terrain dropped again, and again she fell, their voices growing distant.
I lost her. There, there.
Sliding on her back now, fur trunks whooshing past, right, left, right. No stop this time. The slope kept going, and so did she, slip-sliding over ramped snowdrifts, accelerating to dangerous speed. She raised her arms, trying to slow herself, but hit another rock shelf. Another impact punched the air from her chest, ragdolling her sideways. Up and down lost all meaning. Her world became a violent tumble dryer, an endless, crashing kaleidoscope. Then it ended. It took her a few seconds to realize she'd even stopped rolling. She landed sprawled on her back, her eardrums ringing, a dozen new bruises throbbing on her body. Time seemed to blur. For a dreamy moment, she nearly blacked out. To her left, a fir tree made a strange little shiver, dropping an armful of snow and peppering her with wood chips. Then she heard an echo from uphill, like a whip crack, and she understood exactly what had happened, and she staggered upright and kept running. Ashley blinked away the Beretta's muzzle flash and aimed for a second shot, but he'd lost her amid the brush and studded boulders, too much tree cover. He lowered the pistol, smoke curling in the air.
Did you get her? Lars asked.
I don't think so.
She's getting away.
It's fine. He followed her downslope, descending carefully, finding footholds on snow-crested rock.
We'll catch her at the bottom. What if she gets back inside and tells Ed?
She ran the wrong way. Ashley pointed downhill with the gun. See? Dumb bitch is going north, deeper into the woods.
Oh,
the rest stop is back that way, south.
Okay.
Come on, baby brother. He tucked the pistol into his jacket pocket and extended both arms for balance, his boots on slick stone. He found his LED flashlight upright in the snow where she'd dropped it. As he scooped it up, he noticed something in the distance, something incongruous. The white shadow of Melanie's peak, the same eastern landmark as always, cloaked in low clouds. But now it loomed on his right horizon, not his left, which meant south was actually...
Oh.
Suddenly, he understood.
Oh, that bitch. What?
She must have turned us around. She's running back to the building. Darby was within eyeshot of the rest area now, like a campfire in the darkness, tugging closer with every aching step. The warm, amber glow of the visitor center's single window, the parked cars, the flagpole, and the half-buried nightmare children. In the woods behind her, Ashley howled,
"Darby!"
No enunciation. No readable emotion, just her name, coming in shrieking sing-song from the black. It chilled her blood. She'd bought herself some time, not quite a 10-minute increment, but enough time to steal the brother's Astro, where the keys were still in the door, and attempt a getaway. 50-50 odds she'd even make it out of the submerged parking lot. But hell, those were better chances than her own Honda, and probably the best odds she'd had all night, She thought about poor little Jay as she ran, and it hit her again like a crushing wave, a swarm of terrible thoughts racing behind her, biting at her with wicked teeth. Why did I get involved? She couldn't think about it. This is my fault. Not now. Oh, Jesus, I got a kid killed tonight. She was approaching the parking lot, passing a green signboard, when Ashley shouted at her again from the trees, closer behind her now, his voice cracking into an ugly adolescent pitch. We're going to catch you! The Astro was now 50 feet away. The snow was shallower in the parking lot, and it renewed her energy. She launched into a faster, lighter sprint. She passed an indistinct form, buried under swept snow, what she'd initially believed to be Ashley's car. From this new angle, she glimpsed green metal, pits of vertical rust, a white stencil. Under the snowpack, it wasn't a parked car at all. It was a dumpster. I should have known. I should have looked closer. She kept running, heaving steps, the air stinging her throat, her calves burning, her joints aching. The kidnapper's Astro van coming closer. She wished she'd never stopped at this stupid rest stop. She wished she'd never left her hometown for college last year. Why can't I be like my sister Devin, who was perfectly happy waiting tables at the Cheesecake Factory in Provo, who vacuumed Mom's house every Sunday morning, who had strength in Chinese tattooed on her shoulder blade? Why am I like this? Why do I always strike out on my own and estrange people? Why am I out here, miles from home, running for my life in a frozen parking lot in Colorado, while Mom gets treated for pancreatic cancer? The Astro van was now 30 feet away. 20. 10. And when we catch you, you little bitch, I'll make you beg for that Ziploc bag. She hit the Astro's driver door with her palms. Snow globs slid off the bumpy glass, Ashley's lanyard still dangling in the lock, where she'd left it. She opened the door and glanced to the Wanapani building. She could twist the keys in the ignition right now and attempt an escape. And maybe she'd make it, maybe she wouldn't. But it would be a death sentence to Ed and Sandy. Thinking a move ahead, she knew the brothers would then have no choice but to murder them both for the keys to Sandy's truck, so they could chase Darby down and kill her on the highway. No, I can't leave Ed and Sandy. I can't get anyone else killed tonight. She wavered there, gripping the door for balance. Her knees were slushy. She almost collapsed inside. The ignition was right there, close enough to touch. The steering wheel was sticky, duct-taped in patches, a crunchy sea of Taco Bell trash on the floor. Lars's plastic model airplane. The van's interior was still as warm and moist as an exhaled breath, the upholstery still reeking of clammy sweat, dog blankets, and the piss and vomit of a dead girl. The ignition was right there. No. The snow was too deep. She'd seen the highway with her own eyes. State Route 7 was buried, unrecognizable, all hopeless powder. Four-wheel drive or not, the Astro would high center in seconds, trapping her on the on-ramp, and then the brothers would run her down and shoot her through the window. What if it doesn't? What if this right now is my only chance to escape? The keys chattered in her right hand. She closed a fist around them. She desperately wanted to slide into the killer's vehicle, to turn the engine, to shift into gear, to just try and drive it. To just please try. Coming closer. Darby! Make a choice. So she did. She slammed the door, pocketed Ashley's keys, and with the brothers Garver still pursuing somewhere behind her, she circled around the vehicle on aching bones
and ran for the orange glow of the visitor center. She had to warn Ed and Sandy. She had to do the right thing. They'd all escape the Whanapani rest area together. No one else would die tonight. Ed and Sandy, I can still save you both. She had, at best, 60 seconds before Ashley and Lars caught up to her. 60 seconds to make a new plan. She looked back at that cartoon fox, at the nail gun in its furry hand. That stupid slogan, now a ghoulish promise. We finish what we start. 2:16 a.m. Darby froze in the doorway. Ed was murmuring something. No signal this far from... and stopped mid-sentence when he saw her, mid-step near Espresso Peak, with his android in his palm. Sandy was kneeling by the table, and she whirled to face Darby, revealing a tiny shape standing behind her. It was Jay. Oh, thank God. The girl's dark hair was speckled with snowflakes. Her cheeks were rash red. She was shrouded in Sandy's bumblebee yellow parka, dwarfed by its saggy sleeves. This was the first time Darby had seen the girl in full light, outside of that dog kennel. And for a shivery moment, she wanted only to close the distance between them, to lift this little child she barely knew and squeeze her into a bracing hug. You turned around. Oh, thank God, Jay. We lost your tracks, but you turned around. Sandy stood up, a black pepper spray canister raised in a knuckled hand, her eyes rock hard. Not one step closer. Jay grabbed her wrist.
No, she rescued me.
Sandy, Ed hissed. For Christ's sake. The door banged shut behind Darby, jolting her back into the moment. She tried to figure, how far behind her were the brothers now? 100 yards? 50? She caught her breath, tears in her eyes, struggling to speak. They're coming. They're armed, and they're right behind me. Ed knew who they were. You're sure they're armed?
Yeah.
She locked the deadbolt. With what?
They have a gun.
Have you seen it?
Trust me, they have a gun.
Darby glanced between Ed and Sandy, now realizing the deadbolt was pointless. And they will not stop until we're dead. We need to take your truck and drive, right now.
What if they chase us?
Sandy asked.
They won't.
Darby showed her Ashley's keys. Ed stopped pacing behind her, considering this. He seemed to like it. Darby realized the ex-veterinarian was holding a lug wrench in his right hand, half concealed under his Carhartt sleeve. A blunt weapon. He stepped past her, wiping sweat from his eyebrow.
Okay. Okay, Darby. Keep your Honda keys on you, too. We can't have them stealing your car and following us.
Jay stood up.
Let's go, then.
Darby liked her already. And she noticed a yellow bracelet glinting on Jay's wrist. She hadn't seen it before in the murky darkness of the kidnapper's van. It looked vaguely medical. She wondered briefly, what is that? No time to ask. Everyone crowded up to the front door, and Ed unlatched the deadbolt with a hard swipe. He rallied the group, like a reluctant coach.
On three, we'll, We're all going to run to the truck, okay?
Darby nodded, noticing the odor of vodka on his breath. Sounds good.
Are they out there?
Sandy peered out the smudged window.
I don't see them yet.
All right. Sandy, you'll take Jay to the front seat and start the engine. Give it gas and go drive, reverse, drive, reverse.
I know how to drive in the snow, Eddie.
And Dara,
You're at the back tires with me, so we can push.
Deal. He pointed at Jay, snapping his fingers.
And somebody carry her.
Sandy hoisted the girl over her shoulder, despite her protests.
No, I can run too.
And checked the window again.
They'll get here any minute.
Don't try to fight them. Just run like hell,
Ed whispered, leaning against the door, starting to count.
One.
Run like hell. Darby lowered into a shaky runner's crouch at the back of the group, behind Sandy, feeling her tired calves burn. No weapons. They would only slow her down. From the door, she recalled it was 50 feet to the parking lot, over a narrow footpath cut into the snow.
Two.
Ed twisted the doorknob. She rehearsed the next minute in her mind. She estimated the four of them could run 50 feet in maybe 20 seconds, 30. Another 10 seconds to pile into the truck, for Sandy to fumble her keys into the ignition. More time for the four to start moving, slogging through the dense snow. And that was assuming Ed and Darby wouldn't need to push it, or dig the tires out, or scrape the windows. And somehow, in the back of her mind, she knew. It's been too long. Ashley and Lars were only a minute or so behind me. They're back already.
Three.
Ed opened the door. Darby grabbed his wrist, vice tight, all fingernails.
Stop. What are you doing?
Stop, 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 she said, panic tightening in her chest. They're here already. They're hiding behind the cars. They're waiting for us out there.
How do you know?
I just do.
I see Lars,
Sandy whispered from the window, her hands cupped against the glass.
He's crouched out there, behind my truck.
Clever bastards.
I see him too, said Ed.
Darby relocked the deadbolt. They were going to ambush us. It would have been bad. The brothers could have gunned them all down, catching them single file on that narrow path with nowhere to run. Target practice. It gave Darby a sickly shot of adrenaline, as sour as tequila. They'd been a single poor decision away from being murdered. Her gut feeling had just saved their lives. Clever, clever, clever.
How did you know?
Ed asked her again. It's what I would have done, Darby shrugged. If I were them. Jay smiled.
I'm glad you're not. I think I see Ashley, too, Sandy said. Behind the van.
Darby imagined Ashley Garver out there in the cold, crouched in the snow, with his green eyes trained on the door. She hoped he was disappointed. She hoped he was realizing right now that his nasty little trap had failed, that his prey had outwitted him for the third or fourth time tonight. She hoped he was keeping score. She hoped the self-proclaimed magic man was getting pissed off. Sandy squinted through the glass.
I can't tell what they're doing.
They're guarding the cars, Darby said. Ashley's words echoed in her mind, like half-remembered strands of a nightmare.
We're going to catch you, and when we do, you little bitch, I'll make you beg for that Ziploc bag.
At the window, Ed tugged Sandy's shoulder.
Stay down.
I see them.
They're moving. Get away from the goddamn window, Sandy. They're going to shoot you.
Darby chewed her lip, knowing Ed was right. The glass was a major structural weakness. A bullet, or even a big rock. And the two brothers could climb the snowdrift and slide inside. She stood in the center of the room, spotlighted under fluorescent lights, running her fingertips along the table's scratched surface. She turned a wobbly 360 degrees, scanning from east to north to west to south, 4 walls on a cement foundation, a front door with a deadbolt, 1 large window, and 2 smaller ones in each restroom. We have the building, but they have the cars. It's a stalemate, she whispered. Sandy looked at her.
Then what happens next?
They'll make their move, Ed said grimly. And we'll make ours.
Each move would be a calculated risk. If they stepped outside, they'd be shot. If the brothers attacked the building, they'd be leaving the cars unguarded. If one brother attacked, he'd be vulnerable to an ambush in close quarters. The possibilities and consequences made Darby's head spin, like trying to think 6 moves ahead in chess. She realized Jay had moved to her side and now held her hoodie sleeve, gripping the fabric in white knuckles.
Don't believe Ashley. He lies for fun. He'll say anything to get in here.
We won't fall for it, Darby said, glancing to Ed and Sandy for support. They offered only weary silence. Maybe stalemate was the wrong word, she realized in the growing tension. Maybe a better one was siege. And she realized something else. Everyone was now looking at her. She hated it. She wasn't a leader. She'd never been comfortable as the center of attention. She'd practically suffered a panic attack last year when the Red Robin servers crowded her table to sing Happy Birthday. Again, she found herself desperately wishing for someone else in her place. Someone smarter, tougher, braver, who everyone could turn to. But there wasn't. There's only me. And us. And the monsters circling outside.
And never insult Ashley either, Jay warned. He acts like it's okay at first, but he remembers for later. And he gets his payback if you hurt his feelings.
Trust me, Jay. Tonight, we are way past hurt feelings. Darby emptied her pockets, placing Ashley's keychain, her Honda keys, and her iPhone on the counter. Then she unfolded the brown napkin, exposing her handwritten message to Ashley, and his message to her. If you tell them, I will kill them both. Ed read it, and his shoulders sagged. Sandy gasped, covering her mouth. When they realize we're not running to the truck, Darby said to everyone, they're going to change their tactics and come for us. They have no choice because we're all witnesses now, and we have their hostage. So this building is going to be our Alamo for the next 4 hours. She pulled the final item from her pocket. She'd almost forgotten about it, and placed it on the faux granite countertop with an emphatic click. It was Lars's .45 caliber cartridge, gleaming gold in the harsh light. Seeing the bullet made Sandy collapse into her seat, burying her red cheeks in her hands.
Oh, Jesus Christ! We are not going to last 4 minutes!
Darby ignored her. First, we need to block the window.
All right, Ed pointed. Help me flip that table.
Ashley watched the window darken. A broad shape moved against the glass from the inside, rotating upward, reducing the orange light to glowing cracks. He imagined the glass creaking with the pressure. Oh, Darbs, he spat in the snow. I love you. Lars glanced over to him. He was crouched in a diligent firing stance by the Ford's tailgate, his elbow resting on the bumper, his Beretta aimed at the front door.
Don't bother, Ashley said. They're not coming out. She called the ambush.
How?
She just did.
He stood up and walked a few paces, cracking his sore vertebrae, stretching his legs, inhaling the alpine air.
Jesus, isn't she something? I just love that little redhead.
perched against a vertical world of firs, white spruce, and rocky summits, the Wanapani Visitor Center looked like a nut to be cracked. The snowfall had ended. The sky had opened up to a pristine void, the clouds thinning away, revealing a pale crescent and piercing stars. And the world had changed with it, drawn in the ice-pick shadows of the new moonlight, a moon begging for blood. The fun, as always, was deciding how. He'd been through dozens of Lars's pets. Turtles, fish, two dogs, more shelter rescue cats than he could count. And whether it was bleach, bullets, fire, or the meaty click of a knife striking bone, there's no dignity in death. Every living creature dies afraid. For all her cunning, Darby would learn this, too. Ashley stood silent for a long moment, sucking on his lower lip. Finally, he decided. "Change of plans," he said. "We'll do it indoors."
"All of them?"
"Yes, baby brother. All of them." "Weapons," Darby said. "What do we have?"
"My pepper spray."
"What else?" Sandy pointed to Espresso Peak.
"I mean, there's a coffee kitchen there, but it's locked."
"Hang on." Ed crossed the room. "Let me try my key."
"A key? Where'd you get a..."
He smashed the padlock with his lug wrench, sending pieces skittering across the floor. Then he grabbed the security shutter by the handle and rolled it up to the ceiling. "Espresso Peak is open for Christmas." Darby vaulted the counter, landing hard on her sore ankles, and searched the front facade. Coffee machines, a bagel toaster, a cash register, syrup bottles. Then she opened the drawers, starting at the bottom and working upward. Bagged coffee beans, vanilla, powdered milk, jingling spoons. "Anything?" "Nothing useful." Ed checked the back. "No landline phone, either."
"There has to be one."
Darby searched the next set of drawers, peeling off a yellow post-it note. "Reminder, please mop restrooms. Todd." "Any knives?"
"Spoons, spoons."
She slammed another drawer.
"Nothing but spoons."
"What kind of coffee shop doesn't have knives?"
"This one, apparently."
Darby wiped sweat from her eyes, glancing back to the cash register. Too heavy. To the pastry case. Not a weapon. To the toaster. Nope. To the coffee machines lining the countertop. "But okay, these things will dispense scalding hot water. Someone please fill a carafe."
"For a weapon?"
Sandy asked.
"No, for fucking coffee."
"We already have coffee." I was being sarcastic. Pattering footsteps behind her. She'd expected Sandy to come forward, but it was Jay. The little girl carried the coffee carafe and placed it under the spout. She stood on her tiptoes to press the button. The machine grumbled.
"Thanks, Jay."
"No problem."
Sandy was still at the front of the room, on her knees, peering outside through a 3-inch gap between the flipped table and the window frame.
"Ashley and Lars just moved again," she said. They're by their van now."
"Doing what?"
"I can't tell."
"Keep your head down," Ed reminded her.
"It's fine."
Darby opened the last drawer below the cash register and found something rattling on the bottom with pens and receipt paper. A silver key. She picked it up, peeling off another post-it note. "Don't duplicate. Todd."
The closet, she remembered. She raced to it, inserting the key, twisting the knob. "Please, please, God, let there be a phone in here."
Darkness inside. She thumbed a light switch, revealing a small janitor's closet, 5 feet by 5, with crooked shelving and racks of saggy cardboard boxes, the stuffy odor of mildew, a mop bucket in the corner, sloshing with gray water, and a first aid box on the upper shelf, filmed with dust. And to her left, bolted to the wall, a beige landline telephone. Oh, thank God! She grabbed the plastic receiver and mashed it to her ear. No dial tone. She tried pressing buttons, shook it, checked the spiral cord. Nothing. Any luck? Ed asked. She noticed another post-it note on the wall. Fiber lying down again. Todd. And slammed the phone down. I'm really starting to hate Todd.
Hot water's full,
Jay called out. Darby backpedaled out of the closet, nearly bumping into Ed, and grabbed the carafe off the drip tray. Thanks, Jay. Now fill another, please.
Okay.
Then she carried the sloshing carafe to the visitor center's front door, feeling the steam on her palm. The water was hot enough to burn skin, and to maybe temporarily blind an attacker. But it was also rapidly cooling. In a few minutes, it would just be a harmless jug of warm water. She was halfway there when she noticed something. A brown napkin crammed under the carafe's silver carrying handle. Her napkin. She halted and unfolded it. On one side, her "meet me in the restroom," and Ashley's probably false response, "I have a girlfriend." On the other, "if you tell them I kill them both." And finally, underneath that, in the loopy handwriting of a child, she found Jay's message to her. Don't trust them. What? She glanced up. Jay was filling the second carafe now, holding the red button, but watching her expectantly. Darby whispered, Don't trust who? Ed and Sandy? Jay didn't answer. She just nodded her head in short motions, concealing the gesture from the other two adults in the room. Darby almost asked aloud, but couldn't. Why? Why can't we trust Ed and... A rough hand clapped down on her collarbone, startling her. Three entrances, so three possible routes of attack for Beavis and Butthead. Ed huffed, counting on his fingers. Front door? Dead bolted, Darby said. Front window? Barricaded. Restroom windows? There's two. I broke one of them earlier tonight to climb inside. She felt her shoulders sag. That's what I'm worried about. She wasn't just worried. She was now certain. That was the route Ashley and Lars would try first. The stacked picnic tables outside formed a stairway up to the broken men's restroom window. It was another structural weakness, and Ashley was acutely aware of its existence. It had saved Darby's life twice tonight. Ed was still considering this, and again, she whiffed that odor on his breath. Vodka or gin, maybe? Please, she thought. Please don't be drunk. Can they fit through it? He asked. They'll try. We don't have much to block it with. Maybe... Darby considered this, eyeing the lug wrench in Ed's hand. She remembered Sandy's pepper spray, plus the carafes of scalding water. She dashed to the restrooms, her mind racing. Maybe we'll use that to our advantage. How so? She elbowed open the door and pointed down the long room, past the green stalls, at the empty triangular window on the far wall. Ashley and Lars will have to crawl through, one at a time, to get inside to us. They can't go feet first, they'll have to go head first, so they can cover the room with their gun, and then they'll have to twist around and drop down to land on their feet. Ed looked at her, impressed. And you climbed that? Here's my plan. One of us will... Darby halted, remembering her conversation in this very same restroom, under the same buzzing lights, with Ashley himself. 2 hours ago, they'd bickered over who would be person A, the attacker, and who would be person B, the backup. From now on tonight, she decided with a held breath, I'm person A. No more excuses. Dara? I'll squish flat against the wall, she continued, pointing at the furthest stall. Right in that corner there. And they won't see me when they climb inside, and... Ed grinned. We can pepper spray him. And take his gun. And kill them both. The brothers were armed and physically stronger, so allowing one or both of them inside would be fatal. But this window was a natural bottleneck, and it would be their only realistic route inside, unless they managed to break the deadbolt or get through the barricaded window. And, Darby knew, if Ashley entered first with the gun, she'd stand a half-decent chance of overpowering him with pepper spray or scalding water. If she managed to steal their .45, it'd be a game-changer. Ed opened the stall door.
I'll guard the window.
No, I'm doing this. Dara, it should be me. I said I'm doing it, she snapped. I'm the only one small enough to hide here. And I'm the one who started this. And I'll never be person B again, for as long as I live. She'd expected more of an argument, but Ed only stared. She'd almost corrected him about her name once and for all, but she didn't, because, hell, tonight, Dara was close enough. And she was grateful she didn't have to mention the alcohol on his breath. Maybe that's why Jay doesn't trust you? He paused.
So, you were the one who found Jay?
Yeah, I got her out.
And they'd been traveling with her, parked outside, right under our noses, while I played go fish with the dirtbag?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You're a hero, Dara.
Not yet, she winced, looking at the floor, fighting a sickly chill. Hour by hour, she'd grown to loathe that word. And not even close. Not if I get you and your cousin killed tonight.
You won't, Ed said. Hey, look at me.
Reluctantly, she did.
Some words of wisdom for you, he said. Do you know the first thing they tell you in the Claremont Rehab Center? When you first walk through those doors and check in your items and sign all the intake forms and sit down? She shook her head. Me neither, he smiled. But I'll let you know, okay?
She laughed. It didn't make her feel any better, but she pretended it had. Like a rushed little pep talk in a restroom had been all she needed. She smiled, letting her scar materialize on her eyebrow. I'll hold you to it, Ed.
You bet.
As he returned to the lobby, she felt something still lumped in her right pocket. Ashley's keychain. She pulled it out and inspected it, fanning the keys in her palm. A black USB drive, a key to a storage unit place called Sentry Storage, and lastly, the all-important key to the kidnapper's Chevrolet Astro. Then she closed a fist around them, and before she could reconsider, hurled them out the window. A soft thump as they landed outside. Call it a peace offering. A chance for Ashley and Lars to cut their losses, take their Astro van, and attempt a getaway before the sun came up, before the snowplows arrived, before the cops came in with their guns drawn. Take your keys, she wanted to shout. No one has to die tonight. Please, just take your keys, Ashley, and we'll all go our separate ways. It was a nice fantasy, but somehow she figured there was no chance this standoff could end without bloodshed. The brothers Garver had too much at stake to simply walk away. She'd already sat across the table from Ashley tonight, looked him in the eyes, and seen the ruthless clarity in them. Like light refracted through a jewel. A young man who saw people as meat. Nothing more. And the witching hour was approaching.
That time of evil, of demonic entities, of crawling things that live in the dark. Just superstition.